it fresh. The Nightside is live on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Welcome back to the show. Great to have you along on a Tuesday night. It is that one Tuesday a month where we welcome in Ed Prucci, News Talk 1010 Chief Legal Analyst, but he's wearing a different hat tonight. He is the crime traveler. Welcome back. We had you on earlier. It's great to see you.
Feels totally different now. The tie's off.
Tie's off. You got your Bermuda shorts on.
I can smell the sea salt in the air. There's a seagull off in the distance.
You've mentioned to me before that the one great thing about coming back from a vacation is planning another one.
Yeah, I've got a few irons in the poker, if that's the term. I always do. I love planning the next stage because that doesn't cost you anything. When you're actually on the trip, that's when you're paying the money.
That's
but
true.
Planning, you extend that 1 week or 2 week vacation for months if you can sit there and just be dreaming about it all the time. So
now we're
it's a
little
bit of imagination.
We're going to talk about cruising tonight, but what is your next trip that you've got planned?
Oh boy. So, in terms of what's actually locked down, I am going to be going to Disney, in sort of middle of April. So we've talked about Universal Studios. It's been a long time since I've been to Disney World. My kids have been to Disneyland for a short period of time. Disney World, of course, is unfathomably bigger, about 10 times the size of Disneyland. So we're in the process of really micro planning that, like almost to the hour. And I'll have some really interesting tips and tricks, assuming that this works, because I'm partnering with some organizations that sort of help you use metrics to actually get maximum time, which I know drives some people crazy, but is my dream come true. What's currently at the top of my bucket list is actually another cruise, but a cruise to Antarctica.
Oh, wow.
So not the typical Caribbean cruise. And that's something that I'm examining and trying to work out for this time next year, because Antarctica, obviously, other side of the planet, flip side of the season. So you can only get through in their summer, which is our winter. So you got to make plans for the following winter now.
So how many cruises have you been on?
I think I've been on six over the course of my life. Now, there are some people where I'm already seeing people text in saying, hey, I'm on cruise number 11. I'm on cruise number 93. And there are some people who that's all they do. Once they cruise, they never go anywhere else. And I can understand why, especially if you're not a micromanager, especially if you want everything taken care of for you. It is even easier than an all-inclusive sort of beachfront, because you get a much richer variety, I think, of opportunities, a variety of restaurants, a variety of location, a variety of excursion. And yet all of the difficulty that comes with planning all of those things is gone, because it's all right there at your fingertips. There's a concierge on board every ship. There's, from your phone, from your computer, right on board, you can plan all of that. You always come back to the same stateroom, and the staff treat you just absolutely unbelievably. And then from a cost perspective, it's relatively speaking cost effective. And I'm saying relatively because it used to be, one of the things I want to talk about today was the myths of cruising.
Mm-hmm.
Big one was that it's all inclusive. And it used to be, I'd say about a decade ago, maybe a little bit more, you would plunk down your whatever it was, $1,500, $2,000. I mean, you could probably get a little less, a little more, depending on how you go for a week-long cruise. That was it. Those days are gone. I mean, the cruise is very much about upsell, upsell, upsell. Now, you can avoid all of that if you're disciplined. You can say, I've paid for my cruise. I can still see every show that's on board the ship. I can still hit the buffet 78 times a day if I want to do that. You'll still obviously be dropped off at every port. But if you want the premium drink package, if you want pop, if you want the photos that they're taking on board the ship, if instead of the buffet you want to go to the steakhouse or you want to go to the seafood restaurant, you want to try skating on the ice, a lot of these things are extra cash. So you really have to have in mind budget plus, depending on what it is that you're going to want to do.
Okay. So everything on top of the basic buffet is like, that's the all-inclusive, the basic buffet.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say everything. The vast majority of cruise lines will include a significant number of restaurants, what they'll call specialty restaurants, in addition to the buffet. So, and the main dining room is always included. So if you want to go to the buffet, you can do that pretty much 24/7. Like almost literally, it's always open. There's always something happening. The main dining room in these larger cruise ships is typically included. Now, not your wine and not your pop. You'll have to buy those, soda pop plans, or if you want liquor with your dinner, that typically will cost you extra. But a lot of the cruise lines now have gone to like serious specialty restaurants. So you're talking about celebrity chefs. You're talking about the high-end Vegas name brand restaurants that are now on board. So if you want to experience those, there is traditionally now a premium for that. And I think oftentimes it is worth it, but you have to have that in mind.
Somebody's asking about tipping on cruises.
So different cruise lines treat it in different ways. Now, tipping is very standardized in the sense that at some point, usually if you're taking a typical 7-day cruise, you know, around day six, the cruise line's going to come around and start talking to you about tipping. And they'll tell you exactly what the quote unquote expected amount is. And of course, you can deviate from that any way you wish. Some cruise lines will make it super all inclusive. So they'll tell you up front, hey, tipping is included. You want to go over and above? Obviously, no one's going to say no to that, but some will even discourage it. The majority will tell you that gratuities are not included and they'll ask you to forward it. And so some of the cruise lines will even take the money from you and then pass it along to the various staff. So if you just sort of tick off a box on your reservation, it'll say, yeah, charge me the standard amount for all of my tips. And then they'll give you a little voucher so you can have the formal handing off ceremony to your head waiter, your assistant waiter, all of those people, and sort of to thank them for their service. The service really is, though, a very big deal. I mean, cruise lines, I think more than almost anything else in the travel industry, those people work extraordinarily hard. They're typically from you know, all around the world, places where they're taken away from their family. They're working sort of 7-8 months at a time, then they get a month off. And boy, they will do anything and everything to please you. And I guess part of that is the expectation of a gratuity. I think part of that is just they're damn hardworking people, and it makes for some really great service.
One of the complaints I have heard about cruises is the crowds on the cruise. When there are excursions, getting on the boat, getting off the boat, is that something that's typical with most cruises?
So first of all, I think we have to, it's hard to lump all cruises into one category, right? I mean, you've got companies that specialize in small cruise lines. And when I talk about that, you may be talking about ships that are 80 to 100 people. When I was cruising the Galapagos, and I'm sure we'll talk about that on another show, we had 16 people on our little catamaran. So that's very different than the experience of a mega cruise where you can quite literally have 5,000, 4,000 to 5,000 passengers plus another 2,000 crew. These things are enormous. They are cities. And so, yes, there can be that fear of crowding, but they're also extraordinarily good at moving people around and managing those big crowds. So there are some tips, though, to that, especially getting on board and getting off board. I mean, you talk to your concierge, you sort of schmooze up those people, decide when you're going to get on the ship, get off the ship. My personal preference is to get on absolutely right away, even though they'll try to stagger you out. I want to be first on, and then the very first thing I do is I go to whatever I think is going to be the busiest attraction on board. So if your ship's hot item is they've got a surfing simulator on board, and believe they actually have this.
Wow.
Skating rinks, bumper cars, ropes course, the water slides. These are all actual things that different cruise companies will highlight on board their ships. Get on board first thing in the morning. They turn around very fast. So, you know, if the ship arrives in port at 8 a.m., by 11 a.m., they're putting people on board. So if you can massage your way onto that ship, you then go straight to that attraction, it'll be pretty much empty. And particularly if you're willing to pay a premium, you buy a suite, for example, on board the ship, or you're a loyalty member because you've been on so many cruises already, you've got the gold, platinum, super, diamond, elite status, they're going to let you on first. So there are big pluses to doing that.
Okay, when we come back, we are going to talk about preparing for a cruise. We'll talk about room upgrades, how to save money on shore excursions, because I know those can be very expensive as well. Ed Prucci is here. It is our monthly Crime Traveler segment. And if you have any questions or comments about cruises, 416-872-1010. You can text us at 71010. You're listening to The Night Side. Ed Prucci is here. It's the Crime Traveler. This is easy. Every girl wanted to be Julie.
Didn't
every girl, Julie on the Love Boat,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course. I mean, what a great marketing sort of campaign that was. I mean, nowadays we're so used to the idea of product placement inside television shows and in movies. At the time of the Love Boat, I don't think too many people were thinking about that. And here they basically designed a rolling advertisement every single week. You know, once a week you'd see a new episode and just reminding you how incredible it was. And those ships are nothing compared to what the ships are like today. Like if you're still picturing the Love Boat or even worse, Gilligan's Island in your head for a cruise, man, you need to take a second look because the industry has completely just gone off the deep end.
You mentioned that people often say to you they're worried about getting seasick on a cruise.
Yeah. So my wife is the most nauseous person on the planet. And, you know, at the mere thought of riding backwards on a subway train, she will throw up. The mere thought of boarding anything sort of smaller than a city, she will throw up. And yet we've been on multiple cruises. And while I'm not going to say she was 100% perfect, she'll kill me for that. She has various sort of tips and tricks, which I don't buy any of them. I think they're all psychosomatic, but the reality is they work for her. So I'm not going to complain about the C-bands that she puts on her wrist and the dance and the pigeon things that she does and whatever not, but it works. So I have rarely found anyone on ships sort of over 2,000 passengers, let's put it that way, where these ones with the big stabilizers that are trolling the Caribbean, that are trolling Europe, you do not see people throwing up on those ships regularly. I mean, I have no doubt that there's one or two people like that, but having been on much smaller ships where a lot of people were getting ill, the big ships, you barely sense the motion. And when you do, you know, you're too busy rocking the water slide or stuffing your face with another lobster bisque or who knows what. So I really urge people that if you think nausea is what's keeping you off a boat, you probably just pick a big ship, sail from the most southerly point you can. So you don't have to leave from Miami. You could leave from Puerto Rico, for example, where the waters are a little less rough. Don't go in August or end of July where it's hurricane season.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
And you'll probably be fine. Of course, hurricane season is the cheapest time to go, or at least one of the cheapest times to go. The other thing you could do is, of course, the week after the holidays.
There's a reason why it's the
there
cheapest.
There is a reason. Now, look, I mean, those ships don't often get hit by hurricanes because they know, they see it on the radar. They move, they will change their ports, on schedule like that and things like that. But nobody wants to be caught in the rain when you've only got 7 days of vacation. You want to be where it's nice and sunny. So keep that in mind. If you're leaving the week after everybody gets back to school in January, you're going to have, first of all, probably not a full ship, which is really
nice. Oh,
that'd
be great.
And you're also definitely going to get a deal that's probably a good 40% less than the week before over Christmas and New Year's.
That's worth taking the kids out of school for.
Yeah. And so there's a debate over that as well, but we certainly have cheated a little bit and pulled the kids either a little early or a little late to take advantage of those kinds of things. And I have no regrets about that at all.
No, I wouldn't either. And one thing I think about too, you were asking me in the break why I haven't gone on a cruise.
Yeah.
One of my things too is I'm a little bit claustrophobic and I always think of the cabins as being tiny, tiny rooms. And I hear that from people. So what have you stayed in? Have you had a balcony? I don't think I could do underground. You know, under sea level.
You're never going to be underground unless you're working the ship and maybe
is
you're doing
right?
A radio. Yeah.
Are there no cabins
There are. It's crew. It's all crew. You're not staying. So you're going to be starting, let's say, look, on your traditional sort of super liner now.
Are you never going to be underground?
No, not on, these things are 18 decks high typically. Now, 15 to 18 decks high. You're going to start probably on deck 5 or 6.
Oh.
And you may have an inside cabin. So you won't have any window and no sense of sort of what's going on, outside. And if you move up to the next category, you'll have like a little portal window. And then you'll get a full size window and then you'll get a balcony. And then, I mean, you can go bonkers from there. You can get a hot tub and a piano if you want to spend sort of Trump level dollars, on a suite. Now we've done sort of all the in between stuff. I have not stayed in the big suites and ponied up big dollars for that. Although one of the families that we travel with does that routinely. That is a great tip, by the way, if you have, wealthy friends who are going to take you along because you get all the benefits that come with that suite, except for the room itself, but all the extra stuff about preferred seating in the fancy club, the extra restaurants.
Cause they can bring guests.
Yeah, technically no, but the answer is yeah, sure.
And then
they
you can hang out in their cabin.
Exactly. So you can see how the other side lives. And the crime traveler is very much in favor, of a little friendly mooching. So that's an advantage. But don't worry about being like down in the dark. You're not sleeping in engineering.
See, I didn't know that.
No,
I thought you could be underground.
The rooms are small though. Okay. Mm. So if you're, you know, one way to save money, of course, you're a family of four. You can get rooms with basically these sort of Murphy beds that pop out of the ceiling. And you'll have four of you in a room. And I've been in prison cells and I've been in cruise quarters. The size is pretty similar. The quality is not, but the size is very close to that. So, but what I do tell people is, look, you're not there to spend the time in your room in most circumstances. At least I wouldn't recommend going on a cruise if your intention is to sit in the room ordering room service day in and day out. There are definitely better places to go. There are beautiful, intimate, small spots on all of these ships where you can find a place more or less all to yourself, whether that's in the ship's library if you want to curl up with a book or whether it's right at the front of the prow where the helicopters land and you want to feel the wind in your face and play Titanic. You know, you can do that as well. Maybe Titanic was a bad choice of words on a cruise.
That's why I'm thinking of the underground.
Yeah, no, so it won't happen like that. Okay. And, you know, you'll go to your cabin really just to sleep because the shows are running until probably 10, 11 o'clock at night. You're seeing Broadway style shows. Then the casino is open. Then the club's open. The last cruise we were on had an ice bar, like an honest to goodness 4-degree ice bar.
Wow.
Which strangely was only populated by Canadians. I found that curious. We went inside there. It was us, a couple from Guelph, a family from Cochrane, Ontario. We all sort of got together and, you know, there we were in Roatan, Honduras and looking around and the poor bartender was a guy from the Philippines who was dressed up like head to toe snowsuit. And he would literally walk outside and say, if you need another drink, just knock. I'll come back in and get it for you. Meanwhile, we thought this was hilarious.
Shore excursions. Now that can be, not always. And these are stories I've heard. like that's where it can get a bit crazy with everybody going to the same beach and then the whole beach is jammed and it's very expensive, even if you want to get a bottle of water and things like that. How do you save money on those excursions?
Yeah. So first tip to do with that is look, first person off is really what you want to be. So if the ship is docking at 9, you should be get your breakfast up really early, make sure that you're at sort of the front doors. They'll typically dock a little bit earlier than expected. It's rare for a cruise ship to be late. They'll more likely be early and be waiting down at usually it's deck 4 or whatever it is that lets you off. Be waiting at that point so that you can be the first person off. In terms of saving money, the easiest thing to do is not to buy the shipboard excursion. So look at what the ships are offering. If there's something that catches your eye, catches your fancy there, before you get on your cruise, start going to places like TripAdvisor and saying, just type in that exact cruise description that the cruise line gives you and see what local tour guides are offering essentially the same trip. You'll see a savings of probably 30 to 40%. And Viator, V-A-I-T-O-R,
that's
a great website.
Yeah, I use that one a lot.
So that will mimic and its local tour providers. Make sure they've got 5-star ratings and lots of them that you can trust them. The only caution I will give is that if you're cutting it close to time, so your ship, let's say, says that they leave at 6, they really, really leave at 6.
They'll leave
people behind. So if everyone's on board at 6:01,
yeah.
you will be waving at those panicked people on the edge of the pier, and they will leave them behind unless you're on the shipboard cruise. So we just had that in Cozumel. Things were running late, and I knew that I would have been panicked. Otherwise, we knew that the scheduled time to get back was within half an hour of the ship's departure. I was not going to play games with that. I booked the excursion that I wanted through the cruise line. Lo and behold, we were 30, 40 minutes late. Ship was still there because me and 60 other people from the cruise line were on board, and they're not going to fly us all to the next destination. It's on their heads.
Right. So that you have to decide whether it's worth the savings or you just want that peace of mind.
Look, if you've got a 2-hour window, I don't think you've got anything to worry about. You're going to be able to get in a cab, worst case scenario, if things are running late, and get back. If you're trying to cut it within 20 minutes, I would stick with the cruise line, pay the extra money, and know you're guaranteed to get back on that ship.
We're almost out of time, so let's figure out what we want to cover. We've got about a minute left in terms of, is it preparing, how to board, what's the best information?
So let's talk about some of the preparation now, because one of the things that you can do, people often forget this, just like you pre-board on an airline, or you'll print up your boarding pass on an airline, cruise lines are all doing that now too. So weeks in advance, if not months in advance, you can fill in all the information that you need to get on board the ship. You can even print the luggage tags, which is a huge advantage, because when you get to the pier, when you get to the dock there, it's going to be packed. If you're getting on a ship with 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people, there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, there at any given boarding time. So pick that earliest boarding time. The sooner you do it, the more likely you'll be able to get that early boarding time. Pre-print your luggage tags, staple them onto your luggage. You just drop them off with one of the staff there, and you don't even have to carry it on board. They don't want you to carry it on board. So pack your carry-on bag with the very simple stuff that you need. You got a bathing suit. You've got your sunscreen so that you can head right to the pool or right to the water slide or right to the surf simulator. Sometime later that night in time for dinner, you'll be able to get all your bags. Everything will be set up and you'll be ready to go.
Will the bags be in your room?
Yeah, they will show up right in your room, so you don't have to do any of that stuff. And they'll do the same thing on the way out. You'll leave your bags out of the room the night before, and they will magically appear back at the pier because they want you off. Right? They're turning the ship around. It's not waiting. They want you out. If they're docked at 8, they want you off at 9 because at 10:30, there's other people getting on board and they're turning back around.
Are there any cruise lines you would recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've experienced, and I love them both, Norwegian Cruise Lines and Royal Caribbean. That's really been the two of the big cruise lines that I attend. They're both a little bit different, right? I'd say if you're going at the high end, so if you're going to book a suite, for example, Norwegian's Haven, that's what they call their high-end suites, is really just a phenomenal experience. Like they really say, yes, you've paid a little bit of extra money, but you're going to feel it. It's what they call it, a ship within a ship. Separate pool, much nicer sort of cabanas on board, separate restaurant just for the Haven Club, separate concierge. You will be the first one off, first one on, or whenever really you want to be. And everybody is sort of kowtowing to you. So if you're looking for the really high end and you're going to book one of those suites, I do think you get better value on Norwegian. I think Royal Caribbean has a sort of more spectacular ships. You can book an interior, quote unquote, interior cabin, but it's actually got a balcony that looks onto the inside of the ship, a royal promenade.
Oh, that's
type of
so
thing.
Cool.
Very neat. So yeah, you're not seeing the ocean, but you're looking out over what looks like, a stylized Disney version of Central Park.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is pretty neat. So, and they just have some truly tremendous shows, things, you know, a Cirque du Soleil style show that has, water acrobatics off the back of the ship, fireworks now, Disney Cruise Lines. I have not been with Disney, but I've heard phenomenal things about what Disney Cruise Lines can do. And their ships are a little bit smaller by comparison, and really great stuff. So it also depends, you know, what do you want from a formality perspective? The old days where it's like your high school prom and everybody's got to bring their best tuxedo and bow tie. Some people love that. If you're the kind of person who only wears a suit, you know, once every few months, that's very exciting. It's very different. You take pictures. It's all very cool. I wear a suit 6 to 7 days a week. When I go on vacation, I do not want to pack a suit. I am not packing a suit. And cruise lines have adapted to that. They don't care anymore. I mean, I can wear a golf shirt, or I can just go to the buffet in my bathing suit. Frankly, nobody's going to care. So, okay. And that's one of the great things about it. Whether you're 7 or 70, there's going to be something for you, and everyone can sort of split up, reconvene at dinner. Wonderful for an intergenerational family and a bigger group.
We're way, way over time, but I got to get in this text question. Can you smoke on a cruise? Are there smoking areas?
There are some very small designated smoking areas. It's okay. Become nearly verboten, so, you know, bring your vape, but you can smoke in the casino, and that's about it.
Oh, okay. Ed Perucci, always so much fun. Thank you so much.
All right, see you in a month.
Yes, it is the Crime Traveler with News Talk 1010 Chief Legal Analyst Ed Perucci.